providing for an effective date, and sponsored by the Senate Finance Committee. This is the only committee of referral for this bill in the House. And here, to speak on this bill, who do we have? Anyone?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Terrio?
Senator Sharp could not be here, so his staff asked me just to make a few comments on the bill.
Okay, if you would, please.
Basically, a couple of years back, the Health and Social Service Block Grants were put into the statutes, basically with language that gradually increased the local match up to 50%. This bill proposes to roll that back to 70%, so that the state share would be 70%, so the local governments would have to contribute 30% instead. And that's the only change that the bill proposes to the statutes. Would put the Health and Social Service Block Grants more in line with the percentage match that we're requiring for the community capital matching grants. And it is supported by the Fairbanks North Star Borough and the Municipality of Anchorage.
Mr. Chairman, I have several questions on this bill. One, why is it just for Fairbanks and Anchorage when there's other social service block grants?
It's my understanding that through grants through the departments, I think, to Manelik and other social service agencies, they get their money that way. This was the way for the Fairbanks and Anchorage areas to get the matches for their communities.
So what are the other social services block grants? What is their match ratio, or what's the formula that they use? Why didn't you do it universally, is my question.
Well, the legislation to put this into statutes happened 3 or 4 years ago. I think it was Representative Boyer at the time who got that passed. I don't know what deal was struck at that time. I don't think there's a requirement for a match for the social services money that go through those other nonprofit agencies to rural Alaska.
Do we have anybody from health? Because I do have some concerns that we're creating a separate entity, and if we aren't, then I'd like it clarified.
See, I have some of the same concerns as Representative McLean, and I guess my question is that I know these are a special grant that goes to Fairbanks and a special grant to Anchorage. That was a 50-50 match, and this is just to change the match from 50-50 to 70-30. Mm-hmm. And I also noticed that we do not have any positive fiscal note saying that they'll only appropriate as much money as they have anyway, and therefore if they only have enough money to match 50-50, that's what it will be, or if they have enough to match it 70-30, that's what it will be. But I guess I need to know why do we really need to change the match amount if that's the situation anyway?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think this is the first year that we're going to bump up to 50%. I think when the legislation was passed a couple of years ago, it started off at 10%, then 30%, then 50%. So I think what we're doing is just putting into statute, making a change to put into statute the percentage match that was required in the past fiscal year, or this current fiscal year. The amount of money it's always subject to appropriation. They would have to provide one-third of whatever amount the legislature appropriates for the purposes of the grants.
Well, if we could get some answers on some of our concerns, because it's just being exclusive to just Fairbanks and Anchorage, and why not include Juneau, Metsu, those communities?
Again, I think those other areas of the state are served by other nonprofits that receive money through the state departments.
I don't think those other areas are required to have a grant.
Right, and there's no match on those.
We could change that.
Okay, Ms. Gull could probably give us some information.
Good morning. My name is Sherry Gull, and today I'm speaking for the Fairbanks Alliance for People and for the Anchorage Union Service Coalition. To answer your questions through the chair, to Co-Chair McLean. The statute is not written so that it excludes other communities. It is written so that there's a population baseline that you have to meet, and so the only communities that fall into that statute are Anchorage and Fairbanks. They are also the only communities that are required to have a match. It was part of that statute that went in, said that any community that reached that population level could apply for this money. The money that the state provides does not grow. And the other human service grants in the health and social services block, in the health and social services budget, that are not state provided are in the BRUs for the various rural communities, and they are not required to make a match. And the reason that the request is in to cap it at this year's level is because it was a new program. Last year they didn't have a problem matching 10%. This year it's been a little bit more difficult for them to reach that 30% level, and I guess they felt that it was going to be very difficult to reach the 50% level.
Any questions for Ms. Gall?
No, I have a question to the Anchorage and Fairbanks delegation, why this bill was enacted.
Representative Terrio?
Mr. Chairman, I just noticed in our packet there is looks like a two-page kind of a history of the Health and Social Services Block grant. It says here legislation was passed in 1991, which put them into statute, I believe. And the block grants for a number of years just were fought for every year in the budget, attention made to restore them. And so a deal was struck a number of years ago, and I'm sorry why I was not involved in that legislation at the time, that just gave them statutory authority and standing. I think the balance that was struck at the time was that the money for social services out to rural Alaska was being provided through the BRUs and the departments. The areas, the large municipalities, did not participate in that funding, even though a lot of the social service programs that they operated within the municipality served a much larger population. Like in Fairbanks, many of the nonprofits that tap into this funding source serve a population outside the borough boundary. People that come into the Fairbanks area also participate or receive those services.
The other question that I have, Mr. Chairman, is that it's going to have a fiscal note, and it says a zero fiscal note. It will, when you make the percentage higher for the state contribution, then it will have a fiscal impact to the state coffers, and so I wonder what lowering the match for the municipalities, right?
Right, but that matches the current fiscal year's percentage. Right now it's at
30%. You want to maintain it instead of reaching the 50%.
Right. So it will not require any additional funding from the state.
Why are you so quiet, Representative Brown?
He's doing such a good job. Well, Mr. Chairman, I would like to speak in favor of the block grants. In Anchorage, they are a vital part of the services that are being provided to people in need. These nonprofits that are served through here are the only people providing emergency shelter and food services, and they provide a lot of different variety of services, such as after-school care for children who would otherwise be latchkey situations. There's a long list of worthwhile things that they do. At the Anchorage caucus meeting that we had earlier this year, we just were overwhelmed with the amount of positive comments about how cost-effective these programs are and how much volunteer effort is utilized in them. And it's clear that they have broad support in the community of Anchorage. And I guess the other point worth mentioning is that because Anchorage is a hub for providing medical services and a hub where people come to look for employment, we do get many people from other parts of the state that end up in Anchorage utilizing these services. So I think it's a very worthwhile thing. And I think when you look at what's happening in the revenue sharing and municipal assistance programs this year, that's one of the major reasons that it will be very difficult for the communities to make the 50% level.
Mr. Chairman, if I may continue. Sure. The other question that I have is that within the present statute, section 296600, you provide all these changes up to 3, but there's no mention of subsection C. Could you explain? Would it be deleted then from the bill?
I don't think subsection C is impacted. It was just the existing statutory language that we made.
It's not being repealed, is it?
No.
Okay.
Okay, maybe we could ask the department if they have any response they would like to make, Mr. Lindstrom. Thank you, Sherry. Welcome, Elmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Elmer Lindstrom. I'm Special Assistant to Commissioner Lowe in the Department of Health and Social Services. I apologize for not having staff here earlier. We have provided a zero fiscal note on Senate Bill 368. There is no fiscal impact to the state. However, it does have the effect, could have the effect of reducing the total amount available for these projects, of course, if the municipalities do not provide a higher level of match, then that will be less funds available for the projects, presumably. It's still utterly subject to appropriation. Whatever the legislature appropriates for the block grants is what they appropriate, and this in no way affects that.
Under this, could the local level appropriate more than 30% if they desired, or would they be limited to 30%?
Mr. Chairman, to the extent a local government has health authorities or authorities to provide the services that they provide, they may always appropriate for what they choose to appropriate for.
Mm-hmm. Representative Parnell?
Are you ready for a motion, Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Do we have any amendments? Seeing none, we're ready for a motion. Representative Parnell?
Chairman, I would move SB 368 from committee with individual recommendations and a zero fiscal note.
Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objections? Hearing none, then Senate Bill 368 has moved from committee with individual recommendations.
It's a downside.
And zero fiscal note.
Again?
We've had a request to hold on House Bill 466 till.
Okay, hear it.
Are we ready?
I'm ready.
Oh.
I have a rough draft.
Okay.
There's less money available.
So let's move then to House Bill 466. House Bill 466 is an act authorizing the issuance of bonds by the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation to pay for the cost of repair and rehabilitation of student housing facilities of the University of Alaska, authorizing the issuance of bonds by the University of Alaska to pay the cost of repair and rehabilitation of facilities of the University of Alaska, amending powers of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, amending the definition of public buildings relating to the Alaska Debt Retirement Fund and provided for an effective date is sponsored by the governor. This bill passed out of the HES committee with 4 due pass and 5 no recommendations. It has a zero fiscal note from the governor's office, revenue, and the University of Alaska. And I think it carries an amendment with it that will provide for the appropriation of $15 billion from the Alaska Permanent Fund to the Mattsu campus. Is that correct?
$50 million?
Ms. Redmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill doesn't need a lot of explanation. You've been listening to me for at least the last decade, every year. For the last decade, we have been here asking for substantial amounts of money for deferred maintenance. We've requested nearly $200 million over the last 10 years and received actually less than about a quarter of that amount. This is a problem that has accrued over a very long period of time of inadequate funding for existing facilities. The University of Alaska has over 40% of all of the state facilities belong to the University of Alaska. And I'm told that 70% of all the facilities over 20 years old belong to the University of Alaska at Fairbanks. So we are a big player when it comes to the issue of deferred maintenance. The bill before you has been a bill that was worked on over the course of the summer between the Governor's Office, Alaska Housing Finance, and the university, trying to figure out a solution to the problem. All of us would prefer cash, but the cash isn't available right now. Bond rates are at the lowest that they've been in 25 years. We feel that second to cash, that this is an excellent time to go out and try to let bonds to handle this problem. In the meantime, the Board of Regents have put in place several programs to assure that the problem doesn't get any worse and that once we get it fixed, it won't happen again. They've mandated a program where the campuses are to, over the next three-year period of time, build up through reallocations an adequate maintenance level, maintenance funding within their operating budget so that we don't slip backwards at the same time that we're trying to move forward. There is a certain mythology that's been created that somehow the university took maintenance money and spent it on other things over the past decade, and that simply is not true. We have done audits on that. There was perhaps, I think, close to $1.5 million that was taken out total in maintenance in 1986 and 87 when we had a 20% budget reduction. Other than that, the lack of the accrual of the deferred maintenance problem is simply a problem of not adequate funding to take care of existing infrastructure. You have in your packet a list of the projects. They're in two pieces in this bill. One section calls for the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation to issue $30 million in bonds for student housing repair and rehabilitation. The second piece is a $45 million piece, which authorizes the University of Alaska to let bonds to handle the facilities repair and rehabilitation at virtually every campus within the system. All of these projects are small. They are almost all done locally. We have, I was told by the facilities people that 85% of the jobs are handled within the communities in which they are located by local people. So it is a small jobs kind of bill. Excuse me, I've had questions about who's paying for the bonds. The bill itself directs that the debt service be paid by the Alaska Debt Retirement Fund. You have in your packet a debt payout sheet. In the high years, the debt payment is a total of about $6 million.
Mr. Chairman, on that point, but who is actually responsible? Is it the university, HFC, or the state? We need to have that on the record. It's very unclear who's really actually going to be responsible for this.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McLean, the bill directs that the Alaska Debt Retirement Fund would pay for the bonds. These are not GO bonds, however, so they don't have the same call on the general fund that the state would have. My understanding is that the state has to take an affirmative action each year to pay it. If they do not pay it some year, then the university and AHFC would be responsible for paying the debt service.
So it's the state first, and then if the state cannot pay for it, then university and AHFC both?
That is correct.
50%?
No, the bonds are split $30 million with AHFC, $45 million with the University of Alaska.
Okay, then where will these payments show up in the budget?
I believe the first year is 1996. these payments begin at the same time. As you know, over the next 5 years, the state's current debt obligation goes down to zero. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I've covered all of the key points that I need to cover. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Representative Parnell.
Thank you. Wendy, what's the total deferred maintenance need in Anchorage? Out of this, you've got $12 million here in this package, and what you give a total figure of $200 million for system-wide, I think. What's the Anchorage figure?
Out of $150 million is what our total is. I believe Anchorage's total is around $22
million. I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Brown.
Thank you. So why is there a zero fiscal note, two zero fiscal notes?
Mr. Chairman, I believe it's because there is no payment this year in FY95.
Mm-hmm. Well, if it's going to add $6 million a year to the budget in 96 and after, shouldn't that be reflected somewhere on the fiscal notes, or shouldn't we have a fiscal note from somebody pointing that out? Because it looks, it's just depicted as if there's no cost in the out years.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brown, I'm not sure how those get. I believe it's because the debt service will have to be, as I answered to Representative McClain, requested in the years. The state is not obligated in the same way that they are under a GO debt to pay this.
Well, but really, the state, if we're going to authorize this obligation and go forward with it, we will, in fact, have the obligation to pay it. Some entity of the state will have the obligation to pay, and I believe we should have a fiscal note that reflects the increase to the budget that would result.
Representative Terrio.
Mr. Chairman, I think part of the problem is it's difficult to show that. It's not a cost to the agencies, which generally is what's reflected in a fiscal note. What this is it affects the state's debt. But how do you show that when you've got declining state requirements for debt service that may even be shifted even lower because they're going to refinance the state's existing debt to get the lower interest rate? It's my understanding that even this increase in the debt service allows for a declining state debt payment over time. So I don't know, it may be that that's just something difficult. How would you show that on a fiscal note other than the information on what the yearly payments would be?
Right. It's just, Mr. Chairman, it just seems like that we'd be maybe displacing, if we acquire new debt, of course, and it's good that our old debt service is going down, so there's some room there. But then when you look at the big picture, there's really not any room there, and this act causes new costs, and I think we should have some fiscal note that shows, that reflects those costs, even if it's not, you know, tagged to a particular agency.
Mr. Chairman, we did submit the analysis of the debt retirement needs, which is part of your packet. It doesn't fit neatly into the normal fiscal note, but it is a clear delineation of what the anticipated debt requirements are each year.
Mr. Brown?
Thank you. Of the total amount of bonds proposed, how much of it will cover its own cost? In other words, in some ways, this is like a lease purchase agreement, or it's called a revenue bond, but really, is it secured by revenues from the project in the traditional sense? No.
So, Mr. Chairman, no, it is not.
Does any portion of it, for example, well, does any portion of it generate enough to cover the cost of it?
Mr. Chairman, no, we don't generate revenue on any of the facilities that are listed here other than student housing. And student housing revenues right now are going to support the costs of operation and maintenance of those facilities. there is not enough revenue generated from student housing to pay off both operation, maintenance, and debt service on the repairs at this point. We are not anticipating revenues on any of these particular projects.
Can I ask another one?
Please proceed.
What is the cost to the state of not doing this? In other words, it seems like a lot of money. If we didn't do this, what is the downside in terms of loss of state property?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have that cost with me. I can get that cost, however. I mean we have a cost of the facilities themselves. I guess the cost to the state in terms of protecting its infrastructure is enormous, both in terms of loss of energy efficiency, in health and danger to students who are trying to take classes and live in these facilities. It just seems that it's really not in the state's best business interest to let its facilities deteriorate to the point that ours have.
My argument would be the same for any facilities that are within the state's own, such as the schools.
I would certainly agree with that.
Ms. Redmond, we recently had a situation in which the student body of the university criticized the state legislature for having spent $75 million last year on deferred maintenance for the university, because they said that we had wasted the $900 million, of which $75 million of it was for the university. So, do the students really want this deferred maintenance to take place? Or would they rather have the money if available in some type of academic program?
Mr. Chairman, I can only speak for the student body, which is called the University of Alaska Student Network, has made the deferred maintenance their number one priority. The UAF student body has made it their number one priority on their campus.
Well, see, that was what I had thought, too, until we read the flyers that go around and they criticize us for spending money for the university.
Mr. Chairman.
It's kind of hard to understand what they want.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Martin, Ontario.
I think on that particular issue, I remember it happening, and I remember receiving the gun. And I think it really happened because one legislator passed out information that was not quite correct, in saying that we were cutting programs and putting it into brick and mortar instead. And it was, when I talked to the students both on the Fairbanks campus and Anchorage, I think they faced a little more reality of balancing of the situation. But I really can't fault the students too much on that particular issue, because I really know they were misled.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Chairman McLean?
Yes, you know, the university has done exceptionally well this year. One, you got the land grants, or it's being worked through so that you get the land grants for the university.
It is?
Well, it's one of the requests that has been around this year, and then now the deferred maintenance. And so I really think that university has been doing very well this year.
Representative Terrio?
Mr. Chairman, I specifically asked our student body what they supported, and they are desirous of a new dormitory space up in Fairbanks, and they've got a building, a science building, that they need a little bit of money to complete. But when you really put the pressure on them, they do say the student government, the organized student government, says that deferred maintenance is their number one priority. I think, as Representative Martin said, the comments that you made reference to, I think, were based on some misinformation. With regard to Representative McLean's comments, we are doing a number of things that are going to be hopefully helpful for the university to survive over the long haul, and I think this is an important part of what we can do to allow them to do that. We've got a situation here, and admittedly, the majority of the deferred maintenance is on the Fairbanks campus because it's the oldest. But also Anchorage and these other regional campuses are getting into a situation now where it's kind of like a snowball rolling down the hill. It starts going faster and it gets bigger and bigger. And if we're going to talk about an economically viable university system over the long haul, I think it's incumbent on us to seize upon the opportunity that we have right now with the low bond prices to try and to address as much of this deferred maintenance as we can. And we bit the bullet last year and took care of a large portion of the school K-12 needs in the state. And unfortunately, although there are lots of needs on the in the university system for new buildings, we've got this deferred maintenance that's like a ball and chain. And unless we, to me, take the prudent step of trying to address these most severe needs now, I think it's just going to eat us alive. And pretty soon, more and more money is going to have to be diverted from the programmatic side into deferred maintenance, and it's going to drag down the whole university system.
Tim?
Okay, Representative Martin.
What's a, if I'm not mistaken, the attempt to have deferred maintenance last year in the education bill, which was a good attempt, ended up getting zapped out, didn't it? We lost it somewhere. So last year, the university really got nothing, even though there was a kind of a agreement that it was in that bill. The governor knew I knew it was on, not even in the bill, until he went to the University of Fairbanks to sign the bill. And then they told him, Governor, it's not in there.
Okay, do we have further discussion on House Bill 466?
I have an amendment, sir. If I...
so do I. And then okay. A discussion, too.
Mm-hmm. I think some of the information that we really need is what is the total debt obligation that the state has right now, both on education debt service and GEO debt, mm-hmm. and how will any additional debt service impact, of course, the bottom line, or what will the additional amount of debt service be made next year. But if we could, too, I'd also like to call upon Mr. Will Gay from AHFC, who is online, who may want to give the committee some information from their aspect in regards to this bill. So, Mr. Gay, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the kind of thing that we support here at Alaska Housing. We would like to help out with problems, but also it allows us to exchange our assets for a chance to have some income and to offset instead of an outright equity transfer. And this is the kind of thing that we'd like to look at for the future to help various agencies within the state, and at the same time keep our net worth as close to the same as possible.
Okay, does anyone have any questions of Mr. Gates?
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Representative Martin?
Because this does have to do not with what only what's required in the bill as it is now, but also potential amendment. And one of the reasons why I thought that the Alaska Housing Authority might be able to help us in conjunction with our student needs is that we have reached out and helped other aspects, other groups of the society, like our senior citizens who are not poor, but they do need housing, and we're building condos for them. We're building rather expensive units for them just because there's a shortage in those type of homes they need. And then also we're building housing for military people up in north because of the shortage of housing. And last year it occurred to us in Anchorage there's a big shortage of housing too, but instead of building, I talked to the committee, instead of building housing for more military people, let's solve two problems at one time and build more housing on the east side of Anchorage on campus for the students. And then they can let those units go on the east side of town. They will have better conditions of university campus, and it'll be cheaper per unit for the Alaska Housing Authority to build these type of dormitories instead of military housing. And it just seems to me we'll be leveraging our money a lot better through student housing than with military housing or even senior condos. And I'd like to ask Mr. Gay how he feels about that in sponsoring military housing for the university.
Mr. Gay, were you able to hear Representative Martin's question?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. my comment would be that under all these loans, the loans that were mentioned, we do anticipate an income to keep this enterprise fund. In other words, the loans would be paid back, and our costs would be covered, and we would derive income from having sold bonds and then having extended the mortgages. And the same would be true with the university. They're all programs that help our citizenry. All of these programs are programs that help our citizenry, but at the same time, keep this enterprise fund full. And in other words, you take a little more in than you give out, and those kinds of programs. Another thing, too, is student housing. Since our statutes read housing for all Alaskans, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation considers people that want to better themselves through education, our citizens that want to better themselves, as a very, very meaningful component of our society, and we therefore endorse this this approach wholeheartedly.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Brown.
Thank you.
Mr. Gay, how will the debt service on the bonds that you're issuing be paid? Will the income that you just referenced, will that be because the university pays AHFC, or AHFC absorbs those costs from its internal funds?
Representative Brown, through the chair. The bill, as it currently reads, and how we would like for it to read, reads this section, our special obligations, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, payable only from revenue and receipts derived under an agreement with the University of Alaska, as described in the subsections, and it would come from the university, from the university's budget, or, and from the payments that would be made by the students for the housing and other university receipts. But we would sell the bonds for the university. The university would in turn pay the debt service. And as I understand it, we would have security, or we must have security, and that would mean ownership of certain buildings of the University of Alaska in order to secure this debt.
Thank you.
Joe.
Mr. Chairman,
yes,
I still have a concern that Representative Brown expressed earlier. One, we should have an annual plan of what's going to be occurring within the university deferred maintenance and a prioritized listing.
Mr. Chairman, we have that. It's submitted as backup to this bill. We have a very detailed plan of every deferred maintenance project of all $150 million. And it is a prioritized list.
Mm-hmm. Representative Navarre?
Yeah, is the deferred maintenance the university's highest priority for capital?
Absolutely, without question.
In your capital list, there's some deferred maintenance, but then there's a bunch of other projects. So if we fund this, are we going to see these other projects, including the fiber optics and other types of equipment, to jump up to the top of the list?
Mr. Chairman, you mean this year, or you mean in subsequent years? Absolutely, and I think that's been one of the difficulties that all the campuses have been facing, is that they cannot seem to get their projects up because deferred maintenance is all we can get funded. So some of the smaller campuses, especially, that have projects that need to get going, will suddenly be able to move forward.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Chairman, my concern with the capital list and the way that it's put together is I just don't think that it's been consistent. There are some projects that are called campus completion. There are other projects which are, in fact, brand new projects, which get moved up to a higher priority through some smoke and mirrors. I think that it's a little bit like what we're mad at the university or at the DOT for right now, and that is that the commissioners desire to have us just give them a pile of money and they'll put it wherever they want. I have registered my complaints with the university a number of times, but that's my only concern with this. You know, I've been a proponent of taking care of the deferred maintenance for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all this bill's attempting to do, right?
That is correct, sir.
Representative Terry?
Mr. Chairman, I think, you know, if we were flush with cash, we could argue about what new projects we would build and how we keep a statewide balance. But we're not flush with cash. We do know, though, and I think we all agree, that we've got this deferred maintenance problem, and it's statewide. Now, there's more in some areas than others, but I think what the policy call that we need to make today is that we know we've got the deferred maintenance, and it just gets bigger and bigger, and is starting to consume or place such a large demand on the university system and our state treasury. I mean, these are state facilities, and if we maintain them, it's an obligation of the state treasury. So, you know, I understand the need for or request for capital projects. I understand how things have jumped around on the list, perhaps through the smoke and mirrors. But I hope what we can agree on today is the policy call on whether we're going to try and address what I hope we all agree is a problem.
Representative Navarre?
Chairman, I have stated that I am in favor of taking care of the deferred maintenance project. I want to make it clear, though, that we need to make sure that the university knows that in the future, deferred maintenance ought to be the highest priority, and it ought to be consistent with their budget every year, so that we don't go and get another huge backlog of deferred maintenance projects that then they come to the legislature for and say, look, we've gotten far behind. Because if you look at the history, I think we could point out that even when we were flush with cash, we were accruing deferred maintenance. And that's a concern that I have.
Representative Terrio?
Mr. Chairman, I agree. In fact, I asked Ms. Redmond specifically what we're doing on the campuses to not let that happen again. And the Board of Regents has taken kind of a firm line on this to make sure that we don't have continued backsliding as we're trying to address this problem. And if I should return next year, I will even support eating up programs to make sure that we have adequately covered deferred maintenance. Because to me, it's short-sighted to say, well, yeah, we're going to increase the programs at the university, but the facilities that they're offered in are falling to pieces. And if that's what we need to do, or if that's where I need to place my vote, to make sure that over the long haul, we have a good, sound campus experience for students that decide to go here, then so be it. Fewer classes, but adequate facilities, you know, that's how I'll vote. And I hope the Board of Regents keeps that strong line.
I'm still having a hard time to focus in on the true needs. When I keep looking at this statement here, it says the entire state is unjustly paying for the foolish practices of the legislature. Now, last year it was foolish for us to spend $75 million on deferred maintenance, and this year it's okay to bond for deferred maintenance. I just can't understand the consistency of the student body.
They're educating, sir.
Mr. Terrio?
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe because I'm closer to it, I can remember back to being a student. And you don't have to be consistent or even logical in your arguments when you're a student. That's part of being a student.
Mr. Chairman?
I guess the point I'm trying to make is that anyone, whether they be a student or not, shouldn't allow themselves to be led around by the nose and making inconsistent statements. Representative Martin?
Well, I agree with you, sir. And I think that the students are learning. For instance, we do have a wire that came down a couple of days ago, the 29th, okay, from the student body government, and asking forgiveness of their ignorance in the past and telling about the crisis on the UAA campus, and they realize in June of the crisis. So maybe education is paying off. I don't know where they got the wisdom from, but it's working, sir.
Yes, but not to give up.
Further discussion on House Bill 466 at this time?
We have the amendment, sir.
Mr. Chairman?
Chairman McLean?
I just want to bring to the table for discussion,
yeah.
Since this is a deferred maintenance for universities, there is a list of deferred maintenance for schools that you have been provided with. It's a rough draft. And these are the top priorities of DOE's maintenance list. And additional dollars have been added for areas which have been waiting on, which have nothing on the list. And it takes care of base schools by providing match and fixing one roof project. The funding source would be 3/4 vote of the constitutional budget reserve. And the total amount of the bill is approximately $40 million. And we bring it to the table for discussion.
Okay. any discussion on Chairman McLean's major maintenance school projects construction?
Did she move it?
Representative Terrio?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to have to oppose it. My concern is that if we go across the line and make this basically a capital budget at all, then the whole thing collapses. And like I've tried to stress before, I think the policy call we need to make this morning is, do we agree that there's a problem with deferred maintenance in the university? If we do agree, then we've got a proposed fix or proposed fix for a good portion of it. While there are arguments out there for deferred maintenance and other things, school upgrades, increased dormitories, I think once we go across that line from the identified problem of university deferred maintenance, then the bill is going to snowball and will collapse under its own weight.
Mr. Chairman, I also state that this is a policy call. If you're going to be dealing with the university, then we also need to look at K-12. And there, as you know, in the capital, there are no deferred maintenance for K-12. But there are some items for the university, noting very small items, though. But so it is a policy call. That's why I put this on the table for discussion.
Ms. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Martin?
Well, I really don't have too much hang up on capital improvements, and especially improvements of this nature here, renovation. I had assumed that we took care of a lot of the problems last year in that very good bill with the $250 million in it for deferred maintenance. And if this is upgrading areas throughout the state that fell through the crack for one reason or another, I have no problems with that. So it's a policy call, as the co-chair said. And we've used vehicles before. And see, last year there was just no doubt, and I'm still disappointed that somehow ever, when we had an agreement, and I thought that it was solid, to take care of the university maintenance on the same bill that we did with K-12, and then somehow ever it fell out. And I'm still disappointed with that, and I thought, well, at least this cleans it up, and the governor understood, and that's the reason why he introduced this bill, to take care of a mishap from last year and thinking that we had the university deferred maintenance solved, and then it was not, and embarrassed a lot of people that was not in that bill. So here we are joining efforts again and taking care of the university deferred maintenance as well as K-12, and I personally have no problems with it.
Well, we have three elements before us right now. We started out with deferred maintenance for the university. Then we added, proposed amendments for new construction. And now we have deferred maintenance for K-12. So,
major difference with the university is that we're bonding. And
Representative Grusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Of those two elements, or elements that you're talking about, the deferred maintenance is the one that concerns me. And I'm kind of looking here that I guess Representative McLean is suggesting here that we walk further down DOE's list in deferred maintenance. And if I heard her properly, the funding source would be the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund. I mean, if I ever had to take If I ever was forced in a position where I had to choose between K through 12 and the university, it's very obviously what my constitutional charge would be, and that would be K through 12. But the way it's laid out right now, I don't necessarily have to make that choice, one or the t'other. This is kind of a both thing, bonding, and another funding source, mm-hmm. all for deferred maintenance.
Yes.
It's a split.
Mm-hmm. Okay, further discussion? Representative Davies. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to address this bill. I think that there are some serious needs in the K through 12 system. There's no doubt about that. My only concern with the addition to this would be whether it impacts the ability of the university to deal with the severe deferred maintenance issues that it has. If the addition of this did not impact the ability of the university to go out to bonds to take care of, and remember that the amount that's in the original House Bill 466 only deals with about 50% of the deferred maintenance that have been items that have been identified. If the addition of this did not affect that, then I certainly wouldn't have a problem with that. I certainly think that these issues in K through 12 need to be addressed. But Mr. Chair, my only concern would be if we add this to this bill, do we then make it less likely that the whole bill will be approved? And if I had some comfort and assurance that the addition of this item to the bill would not negatively impact the success of the bill, then I certainly wouldn't oppose it. And as I guess I haven't seen the proposed amendment. As I understand it, it would not affect, if it takes the money out of the constitutional budget reserve, it would not affect the amount of money that the university could go out to bond. So if that's true, Mr. Chair, I don't oppose the addition of that by itself and for its own purposes, but I do have a little concern about if we start adding, how far down that slope are we going to go, hanging so much material onto this portal of 466 that's just trying to get off the ground that it'll never get off the ground.
Representative Brown?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would have reservations about adding $37 million or $40 million or whatever the total finally is to the capital budget at this time, when one of our goals for the session has been to try to contain spending. I certainly support taking care of as much of this as we can. I guess my question about the specifics is this list and how it was put together. We haven't had hearings on the particulars of this, and just knowing in the past the disputes that arise over the DOE list, or at least from the perspective of my community, and just my question is, what does this list represent? Is this a priority order put forward by DOE, or what are these, when it says NA and a number of the, it says project number, and then it says NA for a bunch of them, and how do those fit in? Or, it just seems like we need more information about what the most critical needs are, and I would like some more information about how this list was developed and where these projects came from.
Partly from the DOE list and partly to look at the amounts that the districts may need. And so that's why I brought it out for discussion purposes.
So does an NA mean it's not on the DOE list?
They have their own listing of deferred maintenance that differ from DOE list, yes.
And I think we had the same question with the list provided by the university, as Representative Navarre had stated, that what is maintenance and what could be new purchases. Problem I have right now is I just got a note that there's a majority caucus at this time, and we we haven't started on the amendments yet, so I'm going to suggest that
Mr. Chairman,
we recess until this afternoon.
Representative McLean, if she wants to move this as amendment, we'll be at that point when we convene again.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Brown.
One other piece of information, I saw they did distribute the general obligation debt service payment sheet. Could we also, when we take this up again, get the information about the school debt situation and what's our current balance and how much is owed in the future? Because this doesn't represent the whole amount of debt that we owe.
That's correct. And this is just a GO debt. It does not contain the school debt. It'd be nice to know, too, that if the amendment in regards to the new construction was to pass, what impact that would have on future bond indebtedness and payments. And then for the K through 12 major maintenance list, of course, if that was from the Constitutional Budget Reserve, there would be no impact on our future debt. But if it was to be bonded, as in the case of the university, what would the impact be there? Maybe we get someone to get us that information, because I'm sure that's going to be the impact there is going to be the deciding factors on what we can or cannot do. Representative Brown?
Well, we wouldn't have the same mechanisms available to us for the K through 12 debt, would we? I mean, if we were going to bond for the K through 12, we'd have to do a general obligation bond statewide.
Well, I think that's part of the discussion we'd have to do. If we were to go to bond, would we just authorize the schools to bond those amounts, or would we use some other source?
I see. That's what I need to do.
I got a little note here that says, where did Mr. OMD, oh, there he is, would be happy to furnish us with that list. Thank you. So anything else to come before the meeting before we recess here?
Yes, I would like to state that OMB should provide a list of how this will affect the bonding payments along with the existing debt amounts.
Okay. Thank you. We're in recess then until we can get back this afternoon.
Oh.